Hello, this is Dee with the News Gazette, dated April 16th, 2018. We'll begin our reading with the headline article called The Heart of the Campus, the Daily Illini, DI Clearing Offices Before Move to YMCA Location, by Julie Worth. In a way, life has come full circle for the Daily Illini, the award-winning independent student newspaper at the University of Illinois. The DI, as it's known, spent decades headquartered in the climate-challenged basement of Illini Hall at Wright and John Streets, built in 1907 as the home of the University YMCA. But in 1988, the Illini Media Company, the DI's not-for-profit parent company, decided to purchase a building near First and Green Street. That was the DI's home for 18 years, until the company built a new four-story brick building in 2006 at 512 East Green Street, Champaign, consolidating all of its student-run media under one roof. The DI ILEO yearbook, WPGU 107.1 radio, Technograph Engineering magazine, and the Buzz Entertainment Weekly. Now, in a cost-saving move, the DI is moving again to the basement of the Curran University YMCA at Wright and Chalmers Streets, steps from the UI Quad. "We're kind of going back to where we were," said Illini Media Board President Tom Costello. "Student editors say they'll miss the airy third-floor quarters overlooking Green Street, but they understand the decision." "This is a bigger building than we need," said UI junior Abby Paith, the paper's new editor-in-chief. "Green Street is very expensive for any business. It probably makes sense." Costello said the rent at the YMCA will be significantly cheaper. Illini Media had to sell the 512 East Green building in 2013 in the midst of the recession and rented the third floor back from the new owner, Doug Larson. He plans to turn the Illini Media offices into apartments. Like other newspapers, the DI has suffered from a decline in print advertising dollars and the rise of online media. It stopped Friday publications in 2013, and in 2016 dropped to printing 2 days a week, though it also operates a daily news website. In 2012, an alumni fund drive raised $30,000, and UI students approved a fee to support the DI and the other student media. The company had spent down its reserves to build the 512 East Green building, as the previous location at First and Green was too far for students to get back and forth easily to classes. The move proved to be ill-timed. "The economy just took a spill, coupled with the change in reading habits," Costello said. "We went through some difficult times. Ultimately, the decision was made, let's just sell the building. The five-year lease is up May 1st, and the Y space was available. It's less than half the size, 3,000 square feet compared to 7,000 currently, but with reporters now able to file stories from anywhere on their laptops, Illini Media doesn't need as much space," Costello said. "And the new location has some advantages for students who work long hours in between classes. It's in the center of student activity on campus and across the street from Gregory Hall, home to the UI Department of Journalism." "It's much easier to pop into the Y after class," Paith said. "We're in the heart of the campus. The Y is a great partner, and we felt by moving to the Y, we could save some money," Costello said. He wants the DI to be able to remain independent of the university, a prized goal for DI students and alumni, and free up money to send students to conferences and training, something it struggled with before. "This paper has been around for over 100 years, and we want it to survive and thrive and continue to provide opportunities for upcoming journalists." A second home. Former managing editor Joe Longo, a senior who will graduate in December, said it will be interesting to be in a different space next fall. "The current building is convenient to campus, too, and it was easy in the middle of a workday to grab a bite somewhere on Green Street. Longo and Paith said. The fourth-floor outdoor terrace overlooking Green was a popular spot, especially during the Cubs' historic World Series championship in October 2016, when jubilant fans poured out of the bars into the street. It's a second home in a lot of ways, Longo said. Northwest Herald reporter Megan Jones, a DI alum who graduated last May, said she never went on a formal tour of the UI campus as a prospective student, but she toured the Illini Media Building. You just felt something big was happening there, she said. Like so many of their predecessors, Jones and her DI co-workers spent more time at the DI than their own apartments. We all slept, cried, learned, and edited from there, so it's sentimental to say goodbye, she said. To be on Green Street, where all the student life action occurs, was fun. Still, a lot of people didn't know where we existed. And the Y's location may offer a recruiting edge, she said. At the Green Street building, it was hard to tell the Illini Media Company was inside, getting journalism students to walk a half mile from Gregory Hall and then navigate the maze of hallways up to the third floor was a challenge. Beautiful space. Danville native Carl Schwartz, a DI staffer from 1967 to 1971 and editor-in-chief his senior year, stopped by the building last week while visiting campus. He met his wife, Barbara, at the DI and spent more time in the basement of Illini Hall than in various residences over those 4 years. Schwartz, who worked for more than three decades in daily journalism in Milwaukee, agreed that the move back to the heart of campus probably is a good thing. Quote, while I detected some angst among current staff about moving from the modern, airy, industrial third floor into a dungeon, they will probably get over that, and within 2 or 3 years, no one will remember the old space. I just hope they have enough space, he said via email. On Friday, packing was already underway. One table housed a pile of free stuff, cleaned out of closets. Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon t-shirts, a hula hoop, a pair of cowboy boots. Co-publisher Kit Donahue has made every move along with the DI over the past 30 years. She started out working in Illini Hall in 1978 as a student production assistant, then left after graduation in 1981 to work at Parkland College. She was recruited back to the DI in 1984 for a full-time position and never left. I love being in this building. It's an absolutely beautiful space to work in, she said. But the building isn't what makes the DI special, she said. It's what goes on inside, the camaraderie, the lifelong friendships that develop, the hard work and talent that regularly produce national awards and alumni who are Pulitzer Prize winners, noted authors, and television producers, she said. It's the people who make the place, she said. They're going to be fine. Our next article is entitled City Test Fitting Neo Plaza Ideas, Downtown Champaign. Public's Ideas Still Welcome by Natalie Wickman. City planners working on a downtown public plaza are putting ideas to paper and seeing what sticks. Faced with a parking lot about the size of a football field, located at the corner of Neal and Washington Streets, the planners will see which publicly submitted plaza ideas are physically and financially feasible. Senior planner Lacey Rains Lowe said city staff have gathered public plaza input for some months now and are ready to make a preliminary design. We're thinking about maximizing the impact from a design standpoint, Rains Lowe said. One of the biggest requests was space that could be programmed in a variety of different ways. Rains Lowe said the public input process will still continue on a smaller scale with stakeholder meetings and focus groups for a couple of months while the conceptual design is made. It will return on a bigger scale in the form of community-wide feedback sessions when designing is done. A lot of aspects are kept in mind while designating Rainslow said, including utilities, management options, and building codes. This is more of a placemaking plan, she said. It looks at how the future plaza and the surrounding downtown work together for events we already have and could have. Some of those already conducted events are larger, like Friday Night Live, but the city is also looking to comfortably accommodate smaller events. Think noontime yoga sessions. The plaza will also be built for hosting events during every season, Rainslow said. We've seen a lot of interest in an ice skating rink, she said. Some cities have refrigerated tubing underneath the concrete, and you wouldn't know if it was there until winter. Some specific plaza features that the public has expressed interest in, according to Rainslow, are an open lawn area with some form of grass or seating, ground-level water features that people can interact with but aren't like a children's splash park, movable seating and spaces to eat and work outside, being family-friendly and pet-friendly, shade and areas for kids to play, components that change throughout the year to keep people coming back. Because the plaza is being planned to occupy a parking lot, the city could replenish the lost spaces in different areas. Rainslow said it will be a tricky decision because some people want to keep the same amount of parking spaces while others don't mind letting them go. The city's Neal Street corridor, which spans from Interstate 74 to the future plaza, is also being redeveloped. Planners on each project are working together to make sure that none of their designs clash. A combination of private, public, and grant dollars will go toward building the plaza. The city has created the website planourplaza.com for the public to describe their preferred plaza vision in 5 words or less. Our next article is by Bob Asmussen on the countdown to the Illinois Marathon, entitled On Your Marks. Get set, go, it's almost that time of year for area runners. I've lived in Champaign-Urbana for almost 29 years. Though I didn't grow up here, sorry, blame my parents, it's home. So I have learned the kinds of things that excite the locals, like adding a fast food restaurant not previously available, or Eberfest, or the return of the iconic Jarling's Custard Cup. Thanks, Bruce Weber, Ron Turner, and former Illinois athletes. But I have to admit, I did not expect the Illinois Marathon to reach its current status. Back on April 11, 2009, the first race was held with more than 1,600 entrants in the main event. That's 26 miles, 385 yards of pain and joy rolled into one. With the help of local organizers and the typical CU buy-in, the event remains strong. Sure, there are years when the numbers fluctuate a bit and registration is a little slow this year. Not a concern. Why has it worked? Start with our topographically challenged area. No mountains like Colorado, no canyons like Arizona, no huge bodies of water like almost everywhere. Flat isn't pretty, but it's heaven for runners and bikers. But it's more than just geography. It's the friendliness of the community and the willingness to help out for a worthy cause. We pitch in. With smiles on our faces, we tell the out-of-towners about our favorite local restaurants and help them with directions. You would think it's the nature of college towns, but I've been to a bunch, and they're not all like CU. The 10th running of the Illinois Marathon is next weekend. I'm not going to advise you to avoid the area. I'll go a different direction. Head over to the course and cheer the runners on. Pass out some water and pat some people on the back. Embrace the race. That's what we do. The race is going to keep adding birthdays for as long as people run for fun. So, forever. And next we'll turn to the article entitled Winds of Change. Special on Electricity and the Economy by Adalberto Toledo. Analysis. Four farms, 329 turbines, generate 9.9 million across the area. For those whose homes butt up against one, wind turbines can be the sort of nuisance that leads to less sleep, more trips to the car wash, and spotty TV reception, critics charge. But for cash-strapped school districts, community colleges, and township governments around the area, those tall, white, spinning electricity generators you see up and down Interstate 57 help pay the bills, and then some. As Ford County officials prepare to meet Monday to discuss whether it's time to lift their 6-month wind farm moratorium, the News Gazette analyzed 2 years' worth of property tax revenue data to determine which towns, townships, districts, and counties benefited most from the area's turbines, now at 329 and counting. Among our findings, in 2016 and 17, the three area counties with wind turbines, Champaign, 32 of them, Ford, 144, and Vermilion, 153, received more than $9.9 million in tax revenue from wind farm projects. Between them, the tiny Armstrong High School and Armstrong Ellis Grade School districts, which pull in approximately 210 students from Champaign and Vermilion counties, received more than $2 million in wind farm tax revenue the past 2 years. Fire districts in the three counties received $191,650 last year alone. That went toward purchases that ranged from new gear to replacing an old fire truck, which the Vermilion County Village of Rankin did. Parkland College received just over $40,000 in revenue last year, far less than the $135,479 Danville Area Community College took in, but still very meaningful, said Christopher Randles, the Champaign College's chief financial officer and treasurer. "That's about the rate of a full staff member," Randles said, "and there's other ways you can try to translate it." At the end of 2016, Illinois ranked fifth among all states for wind turbine capacity. It got there in less than a decade as bullish developers raised giant white spires all over the state, about 50 wind farms in all. And if county governments allow it and technological advances continue, more could be on the way in the coming years. It used to be true that there would be a good wind resource north of I-74, said David Loomis, director of the Center of Renewable Energy at Illinois State. But as tech keeps getting better and better, it becomes more economical for us to move further south, down the state, where our wind speeds aren't so good. Unlike power plants such as the Clinton Nuclear Generating Station in DeWitt County, wind farms span thousands of acres, shelling out money to both lessees and the county. The financial benefits are undeniable. Taxes from the 6-year-old Invergy-operated California Ridge Wind Farm alone have meant $4.6 million for the coffers in Champaign and Vermilion counties. As the largest wind farm in East Central Illinois, California Ridge has a total capacity of 217 megawatts, enough to power over 35,000 homes. Its 134 turbines span 27,700 acres of private land along County Road 2150 North in Vermilion County. 30 turbines cross the county line into Ogden and Compromise Townships in northeast Champaign County and leave a footprint of 8,700 acres. There's also Hoopston Wind, a 49-turbine farm that Apex Clean Energy developed and built for Swedish furniture giant IKEA in 2015. Vermilion County has received more than $2.8 million in taxes from it the past 2 years. The addition of the Pioneer Trail project has led to $2.3 million Ford County wouldn't have without the 77 turbines. The second largest and youngest wind farm in East Central Illinois is the 92-unit Kelly Creek, which began operating in December 2016. It paid just over $74,000 to Ford County last year for its 66 turbines, which power the equivalent of about 78,000 homes. Kelly Creek also encompasses part of neighboring Iroquois County. It pays the lowest taxes compared to the area's three other large wind farms. Locally, the largest chunk of the $9.9 million in wind farm revenue in 2016-17, about 62% worth, has gone to school districts. In Armstrong, it's meant a technology boom, Wi-Fi available throughout campus, and a one-to-one ratio in students to Chromebooks or similar devices. I don't think it's a secret to anyone in education that our kids use technology in almost everything they do, said Bill Mulvaney, superintendent of both Armstrong districts. With the wind turbines, it certainly has given us opportunities that we wouldn't have otherwise. Without it, we would have had to phase in these programs over many years. The way the tax formula works, when a wind farm is turned on, most school districts often see a significant uptick in tax revenue. From there, the number goes down as the state factors in the new tax environment in that county. So, when the state sees larger tax revenue going to a district from wind farms, it reduces the amount it pays to the district. That's the reason the Paxton-Buckley-Loda district decided to stash, in a rainy day fund, the $1.7 million in wind farm revenue it received the past 2 years, Superintendent Cliff McClure said. In this day and age of finances and sometimes unreliable funding, we literally stuck it in the bank and operated our school, McClure said. We always are financially prudent. Every dollar you get, you have to watch how you budget that. You always have to consider if that money will be there tomorrow. At the community college level, where state funding also tends to be unpredictable, DAC used its approximately $276,000 in getting back to even, said VP Finance Tammy Clark Betancourt. For the Rankin Fire Protection District, wind farms mean more than approximately $50,000 in annual revenue, used in part to buy 14 air packs and a used truck from East Lynn. Having turbines nearby also allows his team to engage in some unique training drills, says Rankin Fire Chief Shane Diskin, who has held in case of emergency sessions at a turbine in Paxton. We train to rescue, he said. If something happens to someone at the top of the tower, it's totally different than if we were going to a regular building fire. There are electrical hazards. Rural townships get sizable tax checks too. Compromise Township in Champaign County got $120,000 in 2 years from California Ridge, with some of that money going toward general road and bridge work and a permanent road fund. Pilot Township in Vermilion County received about $266,000 over the same time. With the motor fuel tax revenue frequently in decline, Compromise Supervisor Michael Babb said the township is more reliant on tax revenues for road improvement. For Champaign County, the $60,000 in annual wind farm revenue is nice, as Treasurer John Farney put it, but a drop in the bucket in the grand scheme of a $115 million budget. In Vermilion County, it means much more. The presence of wind farms has allowed that county to keep its tax rates low and lessen them even, Treasurer Darren Duncan said. Wind farms are among the top 10 taxpayers in Vermilion County. He added, in our county, revenue and economic development have been stagnant, so they're a blessing there. What both Vermilion and Champaign counties have in common, though, is the way the tax bills vary from turbine to turbine, land parcel to land parcel, sometimes by just a few dollars at a time. One parcel in the California Ridge wind farm, for example, pays $1,971.24 annually to the Champaign County government. Another pays $1,965 and another $2,029. Sasha Green, tax extension specialist with Champaign County, explained that variations in taxing districts makes those totals different. They're based on different assessed values, which can vary by just a few hundred dollars. but they're all meant to be about the same. Ford County's vast swaths of open farmland are a gem to wind farm developers. When it comes to getting a farm up and running, an area's wind speed is every bit as meaningful as cost. Typically, areas with annual average wind speeds around 6.5 meters per second and greater at heights of about 80 meters are generally considered to be suitable for development. Throughout Ford County, wind speeds are between 7 and 7.5 meters per second. Aaron Baker of Apex Clean Energy said developing a project can cost anywhere from $2 to $5 million, with construction adding another $300 to $500 million. In general, a big project can create anywhere from 100 to 150 jobs during construction, with 15 to 25 needed to operate the farm once it's finished. For now, Ford is off limits to future development, pending a decision by county officials. A 120-day moratorium that was initially approved in October of 2017 was extended indefinitely, and at the insistence of board member Tim Nuss of Rural Roberts, the ban won't be lifted until the board approves a revised ordinance regulating wind farms. The moratorium was prompted by complaints from residents in the Kempton area who claimed their television reception was by a wind farm built in that area. One change being considered for the county's wind farm ordinance addresses that issue specifically. Spotty cable service isn't the only concern cited by rural residents as more and more turbines go up throughout the area. One of Cindy Irk's fears was about the potential loss of wildlife, with some studies showing that wind farms can drive away animals. Irk runs a dog training facility and game hunting preserve in Ford County. When she received postcards from a local developer asking to site a turbine on her property, she started doing research. What she found made her answer an adamant no. "There's a lot that can happen with a structure that tall," she said. "Ice can get thrown off, the blades themselves can fly off." She admitted that given wind farms' far-flung location, the vast majority of people in any given county are not affected directly. But if it happens to a few people, then those few people are more important to protect than anything else, she said. By her calculations, if Pattern Energy and Apex Clean Energy are allowed to build proposed new farms in Ford, 90% of our county will be covered by wind farms. As for the tax revenue they generate, she rightly pointed out that they depreciate over a period of 25 years. "Every year there will be less and less," she said, adding, "I don't think that the county getting a large sum of money is worth someone moving their home." That's precisely what happened to Deanne Sims when California Ridge was being built, seemingly right on top of her house, she said. She lives in Champaign now, but she still remembers the dust, traffic, and the seemingly interminable construction. Apex's Baker explained that turbines are placed strictly within land owned by someone with a lease agreement. There are also setback requirements and ones regulating the amount of noise as well. According to the American Wind Energy Association, noise generated by turbines is in the range of 35 to 45 decibels at a distance of 1,148 feet, about the same distance in both the Vermilion and Champaign County ordinances. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services describes a noise level of 40 decibels as equal to that of a running stream or the hum of a refrigerator. Brad Knight, who lives and farms near Collision and isn't terribly bothered by the turbines nearby, said over time you don't notice them anymore. He also touted the benefits that tax revenue for his local school district, Armstrong. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for April 16, 2018. Please stay tuned.